You can't be in a relationship and not do no fucking. Period. I got a pet peeve that you ain't. I don't give a fuck if you married, if you not. You save your last 4 minutes of the day for me.
4 minutes?
If that's what it is. Sometimes we only got 4 minutes.
And hello, welcome everybody. We are back what with up, your what Sunday up, what Scoop. Up. I am your host, Kamari Love, and I'm joined by my co-host, Richard. Rich.
Richard. My mom Richard calls Washington. Me Richard Washington. I go by Rich. I don't know why she called me Richard. Okay. All right.
And as always, yes. We are joining you live from the world famous Laugh Factory in Hollywood, California. If you guys are joining us for the first time today, we're so happy to have you. And if you're back returning, thanks for the loyalty.
Absolutely. And we're here live at the Laugh Factory. So there's a show going on the other side of these doors right now at the Chocolate Sundays comedy show, which is every Sunday at 7 and 9:30. Shameless plug. Amazing.
Today on the show, we have the infamous David
A. Arnold.
I was waiting for you not to do the A. I was like, this is about to be some bullshit.
That's the one thing I said. If we do one thing tonight, please.
We rehearsed that.
Did you?
We heard that before. It was like, David
A.
We got it.
I had many conversations.
David
about
A.
That.
Arnold, what's emphasis up, on the A. He's a former host of the Chocolate Sundays comedy show and has a Netflix special, #2.
Yep.
It Second ain't for one. The week. Yes. It just released last week,
Tuesday.
Right?
Tuesday. Like 5 days ago. Mm-hmm.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. And, you know, we thank his wife and his lovely daughters for the material. Thank you.
We appreciate
thank
you.
And thank you for being here, David.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me. This is great. I've seen the show and I've seen y'all back here doing it when I've been here before. So it's great to finally be, you know, a part of it. Thank you for having me. This
amazing.
Is great.
Amazing.
And Lonnie's here, so.
Yeah.
Hey,
she says she never comes.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
So nobody even introduced Lonnie. Her. I was like, damn.
I don't need to be.
That's how behind the scenes Lonnie is. She could be standing right in front of me, and she's still behind the scenes.
It's unbelievable.
Can you bring my mic up?
The camera to just the three.
No. You need to be in it.
No. That'll be a good cut. We'll just do like most of the interview with just the three, and then Lonnie will just pop in every now and then. Okay, we got Lonnie.
Hey.
Lonnie in the building. Lonnie is the executive producer. EP.
Everything.
What?
The janitor.
Because she cleans up the bullshit around here too. That is true.
But Lonnie runs the show. She runs the light. If you go over the light, she will slit your throat. So that's
don't
Lonnie.
Do that.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
We've had many arguments about that. I've been told about myself many times over the years. Lonnie has been here at Chocolate Sundays for 17 years.
Wow.
Long, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I had a little break from my daughter was born in 2008. So I had a little break from 08
yes.
to about
and I remember
2014.
That.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I came back in 2014.
Yep. So I've known Lonnie for a long time.
Has Lonnie ever cut you short on your
my set?
Set
time?
Yeah. Cut you short. Not gave you the light, but like cut you short.
Like told me I'm doing less time than I'm supposed to do?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Because I've always been, you know, I'm going to do what I want to do anyway. And Lonnie, no, we'd be arguing. Like, she'd be like, David, you got to. She'd be flipping like, especially when I was hosting. When I was hosting. I would get on one, and that would be it. And, yeah, so we've had our...
Now he goes up there and blatantly says, yeah, fuck that light. They trying to light me. Fuck that light.
I always tell her, I say, listen, my drive here can't be longer than my time on stage.
Oh, my God.
I can't take
that's
longer
a good rule.
That's
so,
a fact. Yeah, honestly, so. That's respected.
But this is, it's good. I'm really glad to do this with you and good to see you because you have been here for...
Forever. I know.
Yeah,
you're very
OG
good, though. You're so...
I know, and it's crazy. Look how much your life has changed. I mean, mine
oh my
too,
gosh.
Obviously, but your career is crazy.
It's a whole different... I know. It's a whole different world now. Yeah, it's very exciting, though.
But no, you and Chris Spencer, I think of, like, my big brothers here.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Yes,
like
Chris
how...
was the original host of Chocolate Sundays. Mm-hmm. He started it with Pookie. They created it. And I used to come here. I remember when I first came here, I couldn't even get inside. They wouldn't even let me in to watch.
Wow.
Like, I was a regular at the Comedy Store. I just became a regular at the Comedy Store. And I used to come down here because, you know, just like it is now. It's sold out all the time, right? And I could not even get into it. I'm like, I'm a comedian. Let me in. They was like, we don't give a fuck who you are. You can't get in here.
Right? It's like, telling a joke, nigga.
Right, exactly. Right,
joke.
Exactly. I couldn't do none of that. They wouldn't let me in. And so
telling jokes.
I remember standing outside, out there, you know, against the wall, just waiting, just keep coming one day. And then me and Chris... found each other. We became friends, and then I got a spot, and that was it. I finally got on stage.
Did you strategically become friends with Chris so that you could?
You know what's so funny? Chris became friends with me, actually, not knowing that, because somebody else told him, dude, you got to see this guy.
Yeah.
And then we saw each other, and we became friends. We just immediately clicked.
That makes sense.
And then, you know, I just started, I finally got in here and started coming and, you know, doing spots. And
How long was it between becoming a host, or sorry, between that moment and then you getting on stage and becoming the host of Chocolate
Sundays?
Maybe
3 or 4 years. Wow. I think
that's pretty fast.
That is very fast.
Yeah, because nobody, because what it was is I think I started guest hosting for him when he was leaving. Because I would come every week.
You was praying on his downfall.
Right.
Like, I hope to God he gets sick. I hope to God.
Please, Jesus. No, I don't know what happened. I think he started doing other stuff. And then it just, one day Pookie was like, hey, man, you want to host? And I was like, yeah. And I remembered at that time needing that. As a comedian, like needing that stage. And this room is different. I had hosted at the... You fired. This room is different.
Can you say it one more time?
This room was different than every other room because this room always had a celebrity element to it that other rooms did not have. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I was hosting the Comedy Union, which was like... The Comedy Union was very 9 to 5. This room is... I remember the first time I was in here hosting one time, and Eddie Murphy walked in.
Get out of here.
And when Eddie walks in, all the energy is taken out of the room. Like, and now, like, if Eddie walks in 5 minutes, everybody's going to know Eddie's in here.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just feel the room, like, wow. Right? And I remember being on stage and just, and, like, really, I don't know if the word is struggling, but I was more conscious of myself than I normally am. Normally, I'm up there just talking shit, you know. And then when somebody that big walks in the room, you're like...
You're being judged.
Right. And then everybody finds themselves trying to perform for Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that the first time it happened, it threw me. Then, he would come all the time. Celebrities came all the time. And after a while, you got used to it, you know. So this room really taught me how to get my legs under me in a way that I had not had before as a host. I loved it. It was a lot of fun.
That's great.
Did you get any opportunities from hosting?
Like here at Chocolate Sundays?
Yeah, how did it?
I did not.
No?
I thought I would. I thought I really thought that I would. I remember HBO came in here to do something. They came here one time. And it's so funny. I didn't find this out until many years later. But HBO came here to see people. And I think J.B. Smooth was here. And D. Ray Davis was here. And some other people. And I was hosting. And they were there to see all these guys. And they brought all of them up. Somebody else. I can't remember. But... I think I made a comment about, maybe it was JB Smooth. Somebody came in and destroyed. And then I made a joke about how everybody else was backstage trying to rewrite their set because this dude just killed the stage, right? Mm-hmm. And all the producers were laughing because all the comedians after that struggled. And they were mad at me. I didn't know they were mad at me. I never got any opportunities coming out of I thought I would, but I never did.
That's like the polar opposite of Alex Thomas, right? Because he was saying he did a set here, and then he said Will Smith was in the audience.
Oh, God.
But, and did a set, and then Will plucked him up and was like,
he was
beyond
a writer.
Fresh Prince,
and
then
made a writer
on Fresh Prince.
And that was
the
difference in the time. See, that was probably in 95, 94, you know what I mean, when that happened. I was here in 2009. I was here. I was the host. I feel like 2006, 2007, and 2008, because 2008 is when I left and started writing for Tyler Perry. Started writing House of Pain and Meet the Browns. So I think it was right in that time frame. And comedy was different. It was complex. 99 basically to 2000, like to almost recently, they haven't been doing. Let's go find a comedian and build a show around him. All that shit went away.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like when I was here. You know what I mean? So nobody was coming into the clubs anymore looking for comedians. They were like doing Friends and all these. They were doing these ensemble shows. And then reality took over. And that was another thing. So it was a whole different.
Yeah.
Alex was like 10 years before me.
Yeah.
It's a whole different vibe now. You know, now it's social media. Now everything is social media pushed and influenced. So.
Do you hate that?
I don't hate it.
He benefited off of it.
I don't hate it. I literally saw what they were doing, and I became motivated by it. When I saw all of these people, because I had been doing stand-up for so long, and then I saw these people that were just, like, getting all these, like, filling up these fucking clubs and places, and I would look at their content, I'd see their stand-up, and I'm like, these people are not stand-ups. These are people who are funny inside the phone for 60 seconds. That's way different.
Completely different muscle.
Than being a stand-up, mm-hmm. you know? And so I knew, and I'm very good at seeing a platform and figuring it out, and then adjusting and doing it. So I just, my mind is very compartmentalized. So I was like, fuck it. These guys are blowing up 60 seconds at a time. They were putting up these little videos 60 seconds at a time. I'm like, none of these dudes is as funny as I can take anything and make something funny for 60 seconds.
Yeah.
With the cuts and the edits and the loops and all the bullshit that they used. So I just started posting videos. I started posting rants. I started taking my stand-up from 15 years ago and just started posting it on Instagram. And I just... And I don't know what happened. It just took off. I put it there. I put it on Facebook, and now my Facebook page is what it's been translated into like 5 different languages over several wow. different countries.
Wow.
So it's like I had no idea that any of that. Yeah. So no, I don't hate the social media.
I hate it because of what you mentioned at the top, where it's. I hate that it's rewarding
yeah.
comedians
yes.
that aren't comedians and
yes.
haven't done the art of
yeah.
like waiting outside of a club for weeks at a
sure.
time just
sure.
to get into the club, just to finally get 3 minutes of time and
yes.
then to workshop and then to do open mics. I feel like there's a loss of respect for the art of comedy. And so as a result, you're creating a lot of comedians that are pussies.
Sure. They don't have that. Well, they don't have
you know
that.
What I'm saying?
I agree. I know.
You haven't done the groundwork.
Like, and they,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's a
that's
big
why
difference.
I hate it. I get like, yes.
I get
think,
hating it.
Yeah.
I get
yeah,
it. I get hating. But, you know, what I realize is you can do two things. This is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they do. And it ain't going to be no different. So you can hate it and not do it. And they going to keep going.
Facts.
Or you can figure it out and get in it. And so I was like, that's I'm not going to be the... The yeah. old dude going, man, fuck these kids. When I was, you know what I mean?
Said, so,
what's a TikTok?
Money.
Exactly.
What's
so
a TikTok?
Like, yeah. My daughters got mad. I got on TikTok during the pandemic. And they were mad because, like, you don't belong on TikTok, Dad, you old. So I was like, fuck
discrimination.
That. I literally got on TikTok, and in 30 days, I had 100,000 followers in my first 30 days.
They were mad.
What was your first comment to your daughter when she saw your 100K?
When you surpassed
oh,
her.
She was mad. She because yeah. I popped up on her For You page. And all her friends, and she was like, "What's this?" And then, and of course, they verified me, and all that shit happened. So yep. she could not take it. She was like,
said,
this
"That's
is
me winning, baby.
Yeah, she was like, this is not real."
She's
right?
the same one asking for a G wagon.
Yes, that's Anna Grace. She wants a G wagon.
Exactly. You gonna be a hater and want
the right. This is how you get the G wagon.
That's exactly yes. it. So they've accepted it now.
Good.
So funny, man. I watched your special. Hilarious.
Thank you very
Hilarious.
Much. I appreciate it.
The honestly, the content that we get from your family, we really, really do appreciate it.
Oh wow, thank you very much. Yeah. It's authentic. It's, you know, it's us. It's not, you know, unless we like stage something and we do like fun with a music or, you know, but most of it is just us around the house talking about, you know, getting a car, talking about what school they gonna go to. Like, it's just real life. And I think that people have locked into it because it's not curated. It's not. My
exactly.
hair be fucked up most of the time. I be looking crazy.
Yep.
I be looking crazy, right? Boris, my friends are Boris Kojo and Nikki Kojo. They mm-hmm. They're huge. They're models. They're just beautiful. If you go to their page, all their shit is perfect.
Yeah.
The lighting, like they on vacation, it's a drone shot. I'm like, bitch, how do you get a drone shot on vacation? Right? I texted Nicole. I was like,
shot.
What is this shit? We're the complete opposite of them. Me
yeah.
and Julie will shoot a video of us laying in bed talking about nothing. And it's just, I don't know why. I think people connect to the authenticity of it because it's
Absolutely.
Not. And it is. It's not. It's really us. And I don't tell nobody what to say. I see it coming.
Mm.
I see it coming.
I can
see
it coming.
Yes, I can see. Right, I can see. Like when something's about to happen, I'm like, uh oh, here we go. And they just as soon as I pick up the phone, they like, uh oh, here we go. Dad has got the phone out. So, but it's
so
working.
How do they deal with that? Do they like being on camera? Are you trying
yeah.
to make them?
I don't think they have a choice. It seems like
in the beginning when they were younger, they were like, oh, we should do a reality show, and we actually were in development for one, and the idea and the direction in which they were trying to go
yeah.
was not what I wanted to do, so it went away. But my girls have not. They've always just kind of gone with the flow. They've never had like a protest of any of it. Like they really haven't. And now when we all are out, you know, we constantly getting recognized and, you know, their friends. So they don't. They're very neutral. They're not like, I don't want to do it. Or they're not like, oh, we should do. Sometimes if something comes up, they'll be like, yeah, we should do this. We should shoot this or we should do that. But they're very easy with, you know, Ashlyn is a little bit more. Ashlyn is the one with the mouth that be, you know, I think she's figured it out. She knows that. She knows how to find the camera. She knows when to interject, and she got some smart shit to say. She's very good. Anna Grace is sitting to cut, and then boom, and drop something, and just, you know, yeah. It's, I don't know. It's mm-hmm. It's working. It's.
Do they have their own pages?
Yeah,
are they building both of up them? Their mm-hmm. own pages?
They are, but it's not a page that is curated to build for followers. It's just two little teenage girls living their life.
Okay, you good know for what I mean? Them.
Yeah. Yes. It's not, you know, it's not like they're trying to. Yeah. Get attention. And mine is used to sell tickets and make money.
Fair.
That's what mine is for.
It's a business.
Yeah.
It is a business. It is a business for me. All of it is. Mm-hmm. You know? So.
Oh, everybody had a question.
Yeah. Sure.
You play rock, paper, scissors? You want to go?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Mike. Okay.
You're the host.
All right, for sure.
I'm just the janitor. I'm just happy to be here.
Thank you. We appreciate you here, Lonnie. You. We're here. We're happy.
Lonnie, everybody.
I felt like the grandfather bit.
Wow.
I was sitting on the couch watching a comedy special, and then all of a sudden, all these emotions started coming up. Damn. And I was like, damn, like. And then I was waiting for you to end it with a punchline mm-hmm. to, like, mm-hmm. make me not feel those emotions. Mm-hmm. And then you just landed the plane so smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
One, it was just an amazing bit, mm-hmm. I think, to
Thank
put
you.
Into the middle of the piece.
Thank you.
And then two, why that choice? I was very interested in why you decided to go a more somber kind of tone versus deep, 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 and then just easy out with the joke.
I was watching a stand-up special a few years back from a friend of mine, a comedian named Hasan Minhaj, and he did a stand-up special called Homecoming King. And I remember I was on the road, don't remember where, but I had it on my laptop and I was watching. And what I remember was watching him, what I remember distinctly is not laughing, but being very enthralled and sucked into what he was saying. And then he told this story about being basically dumped on homecoming day by the girl that he loved to go out with a different person because he's Indian, because of his race. And I remember getting a tear and a lump in my throat mm-hmm. watching this stand-up special, right? And I was very aware of the fact that, oh, it's okay for us to be funny, take 3 minutes and take the audience to a place emotionally differently and bring them back. And the moment I felt that, my first thought was, I want to do this to the audience.
You did it. Amazing,
and I want man. Them to feel that. And yeah. So the grandfather bit, I've been doing that bit for 15 years. Like,
really?
Yeah, I've been doing that bit. That bit is 15 years old.
I felt like I've seen you perform so many times. I've never seen that.
Because I never do it here in town. Because it's not, because that bit is a bit that you need to sit in. It's a bit that belongs inside of a different symphony and a different rhythm. Here, when you're doing 15 minutes, everybody's here to murder. That's everybody. And to try to outdo the next person. When I'm on the road and I'm doing an hour and 20 minutes, that's my time to take you on a journey. Because that's stand-up.
Yes.
A journey. That's stand-up. Stand-up, and Jerry Seinfeld said that. He said, stand-up is not 15. Anybody can be funny for 15, 20 minutes.
Not anybody.
Well, most people. Most people who...
No, not most people.
Lonnie has spoken.
Really a gift.
But for the most part...
Yes, I get your point.
Some people... Right. It's, you know, it's a 20-minute, it's a 15-minute set. But to do an hour, hour 15, hour 20 minutes, you have to learn how to take off, sustain, and bring it in. And the reason I chose to do it, because I wanted people to feel that I did it in the middle of the show, because it is stand-up. So I start off, if you look at my set, I start off, it's hot. I get people rolling, I take them on this thing, and then I end with my sister Robin, which just takes us out. Because, and we had a whole we had a debate with the network and the producers, like, we think we should end on a grandfather bit. And I was like, no, it's a comedy show. I don't want to end on that. Mm-hmm. I want to take them there, but then I want to pull them out with, you know, with laughter. So I have been doing that bit for a while. I knew that I wanted to, that was the bit to do it. So I was trying to figure out what the button of the joke was, because the whole story is about him talking about how lazy I was. And I was in Providence, Rhode Island, in a small club in Providence, Rhode Island. And I was on a treadmill running, thinking about this bit. And I was like, I listen to motivational speeches when I run sometime. And I was thinking about that. And I was like, I need to button this thing up with my grandfather. And I know that he knows that I'm successful now. And so I decided to take the bit and go, you know, that whole last piece, which is I had to go and I've seen him. The boy was not lazy. He just needed to find his thing to make him walk. It just came to me in his voice when I was running. I just started to cry.
Yeah.
And I had to get off the treadmill because I knew that I had found what the button was. And I did it that night at the show, and I got a standing ovation in the middle of the show. And I knew that, oh, this is it. So when we did it in the theater, mm-hmm. I knew if it played right, and I came up with the idea of the spotlight and all that, I knew that if it played right, it would make you feel exactly what you felt. And I wanted to feel that because Hasan Minhaj made me realize that this is okay. That pacing that I had came from Dave Chappelle. It's okay to sit in a story. It don't have to be, especially black comic. Comedians always think we got to bow, bow, bow. And some things do need to be that. Mm-hmm. You know, stand-up is like making love. You can't just all the time. You know what I mean? We get there. But you can't just blow through nobody's ass for 20 minutes. Don't nobody want that kind of fucking.
Nobody.
Not the whole time. Not the whole time. You know, you got to get there. There's levels to this thing.
You got to work your way up.
You got to bring it back. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
A little halfway in, halfway out.
Exactly. Yeah, you got all of that. So, you know, and I just felt like that would be the perfect place to do it. And it's the response that I'm getting is it's incredible.
It was beautiful, man.
Thank you, man.
It really was. And what I loved is that it really gave insight into the behind the scenes of being a comedian. It's it's dark. And also there's a lot of truth. There's a lot of psychology and a lot of light in it, you know.
Yes.
And I feel like you alluded to that very beautifully.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. I think as my comedy IQ starts to rise, it's not just about the joke. It's about why I'm telling the story and what I want to say ultimately behind whatever jokes that I'm using to tell the story. Like, I never thought of that before. Before it's just jokes, 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 jokes. I just want to be funny. And now I find myself thinking about stuff in a bigger picture. Like I'm already on to a whole new hour and 20 minutes that I've been doing. That night that I filmed the special, I have not done any of that material since that night.
Well, that was one of my questions, actually.
What?
If you retired all those jokes.
It's done. I have not done any of it because it's out there now. And so, I did that January. The next week, I was in Columbia, South Carolina performing. I did a whole new hour and 20 minutes, which is what I'm doing now.
Wow.
And we got a whole new tour called Pace Yourself that we're doing 20 cities between now and the end of the year. And we're booked all the way through, like, June of next year.
Wow, congrats.
And thank you.
And who's we?
My team, me.
Oh, okay.
You know, I always say we because it's my team and all, you know, all of us. And, you know, and we're moving into theaters now. At the, you know, September, October, I go into theaters. I'm living Carnegie Music Hall. And it's just, I don't know when all of it, you know, because I never believe nobody's coming to the show. Every time I get booked, I'm like, every time my agent calls me, we got you this. I'm like, when he called me and said we're doing Carnegie Music Hall, I was like, why? Nobody's coming. Like, what are you doing? Like, I don't know why. I always think nobody's coming.
Yeah.
That's just where I've been doing this for so long and nobody's been coming.
Well,
and
you set your expectations low, and then
I'm always shocked when it sells out.
No, yeah. I do the same thing with chocolate sundaes.
Exactly.
Like, so, every week, I'm like, we're sold out again.
I cannot believe it. It's always a surprise. So,
okay, I have a question about the special. So
okay.
You said, did you have full creative control? You said that you guys disagreed about the grandfather thing.
Yes, I did, for the most part.
So at the end, when you, like, went to Laugh Factory and talked about all that, and you did not mention one time chocolate sundaes, that was your decision.
Well, no, no. I felt a setup coming. That's the only reason
Lonnie wanted to be on the podcast.
I felt the bullshit, though.
No.
Record it. The bullshit is coming.
To be honest, we recorded a lot of footage. Mm. And I did there was a shot where I'm in New York, in my hotel room in New York, and I'm talking about getting ready for the special. And there was a time when I mentioned all of the clubs. I mentioned Chocolate Sundays. I mentioned the Comedy mm-hmm. Union. And they cut a lot of it out because we can only do so much time. So, and Jamie was like, if you're going to shoot in the Laugh Factory, you need to make sure that you pay homage to the Laugh Factory. And I did. And I did mention Chocolate Sundays at another time, mm-hmm. but they cut it out.
They cut the bit that when he had his Chocolate Sundays hoodie on. They cut that out.
Every podcast I do, I am always quick to mention the places where I grew as a stand-up. Yeah. And this is one of them. I can honestly say that this is one of the stages that I've grown on tremendously.
Okay, you cleaned it up.
I know. Good save.
I feel like, we're running out of time. This is, I feel like we could go for another 30, 40 minutes. Honestly, man, I have so many questions for you. Mm-hmm. The first is, you used to teach a writing class.
Stand-up class
mm-hmm. class back in the day. Mm-hmm. Are there any comedians that took your class and you were like, oh, hell no?
Sure. I didn't remember them. Okay. But, I mean, there's comedians that I've worked with and I go, mm-hmm. that day. It's not my job to tell you ain't got it. Yeah. Because at any moment it could click for you. You know what I'm saying? I can look at, only thing I do is tell, I can't make you funny. Nobody can make you funny. Only thing I can do is give you the formula and the tools that of which I use to build my act. And you have to pick those tools up and do your own thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like I have a lot of comedians that I've worked with that have very successful careers. I do not take credit for any of their careers because it don't. Tony Baker took my class. Zainab Johnson took my class. Like, there's so many comedians that are killing that all came from my stand-up class. To this day, I've never walked up to anybody and said, hey, I teach a class. You want to come? I've never talked about who taking my class because it doesn't matter. I just happen to be a small part of those people's journeys and help point them in a direction that nobody did for me, because nobody helped me when I moved here. I didn't have one friend when I moved here. So I didn't know what I was doing. And I taught the class to really help people more so because nobody helped me. And I'll keep teaching. I'm going to do it again, but I'm not going to do 6-week classes. I'm going to do weekends because my schedule won't allow me to do a 6-week thing. But mm-hmm. me and Naeem are talking about it the other day. I'm going to do like 8 hours or 6 hours on a Sunday and a Saturday. I'm going to do that, but I will do it because I have like over 375 people on my waiting list.
Wow.
I know. I didn't even know it was 375 people doing it. Right. So, you know.
Everyone talks about the class.
The class has gotten a reputation. Yeah. And like I said, I don't advertise. It's all word of mouth. Yeah. Like, I started doing it 10 years ago, and I think the reason that it works is because people do well, and people have come out of it doing well. You know what I mean? And it's not a gimmick for me to make money. Yeah. It's a gimmick for me to just tell you.
You're going to be next, David.
Okay, perfect.
Oh, he's on right now?
Yeah, mm-hmm, he's going to be, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, we are back from our break. David just wants to go kill it on the stage real quick.
Hell yeah.
That was fun.
That was amazing.
Thank you. That was fun.
All new stuff.
All new stuff.
Yeah.
All new stuff. It's you know, getting there. It's at the beginning stages, but I'm very excited about what it'll be when we record, you know, in a year, you know, because mm-hmm. It'll be there. Like, I'll tie it into a whole lot of different stuff. So,
yeah
man, it's my favorite part. Is like this is the part that's the most exciting for me, is when the beginning, when I'm like figuring it out, and like the first time I'm figuring stuff out, it's for me. Once I got it and it's figured out, it's for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So like, even when stuff doesn't work, it doesn't, like, I'm starting to enjoy that because that is the most new work that I get a chance to do.
Yeah, gives you room to work.
Right, I'm doing the work.
Feedback.
Exactly. And then once it's there and it's done, you know, it's for y'all. It's for the audience.
Do you get nervous anymore?
No.
Never? It doesn't look like it.
No, I'm not nervous. I just, like, there's times where I'm like, just call my name. Let's go. I want to go. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
But like,
not
anxious?
Yes. It's like, let's just go. Because I want to, once I get that mic out the stand, you know, I'm off and running. But no, I'm not nervous. I'm not nervous because I know what's coming. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? When you do the work, mm-hmm. it's like taking a test. When you study and you know all the answers.
Just slide me the paper.
Exactly. You're like, give me the paper. Let's go. Like, I've been doing the work. And when you do the work, mm-hmm. I'm good. So, you know, I'm not nervous. Not at all.
Yeah. Okay, so I have a question about the two specials. So what was the difference? Because the first one you like self-produced, self-financed,
yes.
And mm-hmm. then sold it.
Yes. The first one I did, I self-financed it. Kevin Hart helped me. And I shot it. I went to Cleveland, Ohio. I went to a comedy club. We redressed the comedy club, the Improv. And I completely, I shot that thing. I directed it. I edited. I did all the things. I hired a sound person. I bought music. I did literally everything. I gave that to Kevin and my manager, Dave Becky, and was like, see if we can take
this.
Shout
out 3 Arts.
Yeah, 3 Arts. I said, you know, see if you can take this to them. And Dave and Kevin took it over there, and we gave it to them for free. Y'all loud as shit.
Hey, y'all. Recording a podcast.
God damn.
I don't know if you can see us recording a podcast, but we're recording a podcast.
This motherfucker is loud as shit. Yeah, fuck they dreams. Let me tell you about this time.
That's that OG energy.
That's having kids. Yeah, shut the fuck up.
I was going to have to do that. I'm like, I can't hear nothing.
No, and I gave it to them, and I gave it to them for free. And I was like, just take it and put it on. And they were like, you sure you don't want to try to get some money? I was like, nope. I said, if you put it on, they will find it. And if they find it, it's over. Mm. You know what I mean? I knew that, and that's what happened. The timing of it was great. I did that special, and we gave it to them, and it went live the same week the pandemic hit. When they shut everybody down, week one. Remember when
Tiger
D-Nice
King,
had to...
Yeah, that week.
Yeah, that week.
When people had nothing to do.
And they just started watching Netflix. And it got, like, you watch all the shit that you knew, and then you got down to me and was like, fuck it, I might as well watch this. And the
that
next
make it look funny.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'd give him a chance.
And that's exactly what happened. And it just blew up into my social media and all the people. And, you know, Kevin posted it, and Cedric, all my... You know, my friends who are celebrities and have followings, I reached out and called and text everybody, please just put this up. And it started trending like the second day.
Wow.
You know, and then it was out and it did really, really well. And then, you know, they offered me another special like a year later. And this time it's completely, you know, supported by Netflix. It's a Netflix original. As you can see, I'm on the billboard on the side of the wall here. And they got a big one in Times Square that I went and looked at.
Wow.
I went there and hung out after I was performing in Connecticut. And they're up and down Melrose as well. So, like, it's got a support behind this one that the first one did not have. And it's just, it's killing. It's really, I can feel it. The calls that I'm getting and the emails that I'm getting from people that I normally didn't hear from. You know, Mike Epps called me the other day and yesterday, and we talked for like an hour. You know, and like when you start to get people, Mike and Cedric and DL and Chris Rock and all these people calling you, and they're like, and they're all saying the same thing, like, it's, you know, nigga, get ready, it's your turn, you know. So we'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
It's so good. No, it is though. But that's what's so great about stand up like, you've been doing it and you've been
28
funny.
Years.
You've been this funny for a long time.
I know.
For
Thank
it to
you.
Finally hit
Thank
it, you.
You know? I
know. Like, you I weren't, know. Yeah, you didn't, like, go up slowly. Like, you've been at this level of funny.
Thank
but
you.
It's crazy, like.
The spotlight is now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it finds you.
Yeah.
And it's. And I think that's the reason why it's great, but I don't buy into it because it next week, and next week, it'll, you know, it'll be somebody else up there in 2 weeks on the wall, and we'll be on to a new thing, and. You know what I mean? But the work, I'll keep doing the work. Like, I'm off, like, already I'm off to working on a new hour. What I'm better at is taking time and celebrating my wins. Mm-hmm. So when I went to Times Square, I wasn't going to stay in time. I was in New York, and I was about to fly out on Sunday to come home, and the billboards went up on Monday. And all my friends were like, are you crazy? You're not going to stay and go look? I wasn't. I was going to come home. And I realized I got to stop. And I went and stayed. I got a hotel room in Manhattan. I stayed, and I went to the, I went to Times Square, and I got a coffee and sat there on the table and just looked at this billboard change out every five for like an hour and a half. I just sat there and drank my coffee and,
aww,
you know what I mean? Because it's like,
what did that feel like?
It felt like that's where I belong. Mm. I felt like I, you know, that's when somebody else asked me how I feel to see myself on the side of the building here now, and I was like, it feels right. That's how it feels. It feels like this is where I belong.
That's the best feeling. You right in the middle of your purpose and killing it.
Yeah. It feels, it really does. It really feels, it doesn't, yeah, it feels good.
I feel like if you didn't choose the comedian path, I would go to your church.
Yes.
Somebody said that.
Yes. You were preaching on your special.
Yes. And that is what people say.
Yeah, I would go.
Yeah, that's. That is so. You know what's so funny? It's so funny you said that because my mother believes that is my path. She believes that that is where I will go. And people have said that to me. I've heard this several dozen times. Like, people have come up to me like, you, I feel like you're going to end up preaching. And I was like, all right, if that's what it's supposed to be. But right now, I got to talk about these bitches.
Lord, I want to. I want to talk about
titties for 20 minutes. Talking about titties.
I love titties. My favorite subject. Titties, Lord.
God's like, hey, I need you to preach these souls over here. Hold on, God.
Give me a minute. But you know what? I do realize that I've had a lot of people, because I talk about me being, I've been sober for 24 years now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I get a lot of people who hit me up about that and talk about that, and they're like, you know, you said some things in your special that spoke to me. So I believe that you can still motivate and talk. It doesn't have to. That could be my pulpit. That could be my, that can be my stage. That can be the space in which I do it from that. Mm-hmm. It does not have to be in the traditional,
absolutely,
you know, space of, because I do believe that you are responsible for whatever it is you want to do in your life. And that's why I call the special It Ain't For The Week, because I don't give a fuck what you want to do. You want to be married, you want to have a successful career, you want to get sold, whatever you want to do. It ain't supposed to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that's worthwhile is hard. That's why only a few people do it.
That's what I keep telling Rich about growing this podcast.
But only a few.
It's been a struggle. We've made a lot of pivots. It's not easy. And I told him it's not going to be easy. Because we're going to be big. It's going to blow up. But
yeah, it's like, as soon as you find your voice and what it is that you want to do. You know what I mean? Like, it's about finding your voice of whatever that is. And once you find that, you gone. It's gone. I know my voice now. I can feel that. Like, I don't. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love. My sister asked me, you know, what do you want to do? Like, you know, I'm in the middle of developing a TV show for myself to do exactly what I'm doing, a father, a husband, raising teenage kids. And I want to do that. And then I want to I want to be in a position, which I am now, to say no. Mm-hmm. I don't have to do that. I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to act?
I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, I'm very good.
I have a follow-up to that.
I just see you writing all the time. I know,
because those were the opportunities that came to me first. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, they were offering me a bunch of money to write. I was like, fuck it, I'll write. But I've always been actively doing other things, you know. Mm-hmm. But, like, when the time comes, because I started doing theater when I was 6 in Cleveland. I've been doing that my whole life, you know, studying and all of that stuff. So that's not.
That's going to find you.
With your. Yeah. So with your resume, though, with mm-hmm. the credits that you have, I mm-hmm. feel like you are in a very small tier of black comedy writers that are on kind of the cusp of that showrunner title.
Right? Yeah, that's what I am.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. We were going to say
no. Well, yeah. Noting that.
I created a show last year called That Girl Lele, mm-hmm. which is on Nickelodeon, and it's the number one show on the network now. It did so well that it got picked up by Netflix as well. And they just ordered, like, basically 4 more seasons right out the gate because mm-hmm. it's doing so well. And creating that show makes me only the 6th black man in the history of TV to have a soul created by credit. I own a portion of that show. So it's like, you know, I did not know this until, I don't know who told me. Somebody told me. I don't know who told me. But it's, you know, I'm the showrunner and the creator of the show. And yes, there's not many. There's a lot of showrunners, more black showrunners, but the creator, the sole creator,
mm-hmm.
it's only 6 of us.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how do you find the time? Because, you know, I listened to Kevin Hart's podcast, The Comedy Goldmines, with Chris Spencer.
Yeah, yeah.
And Chris, it was a really interesting interview because Chris is in this space where he's been writing so much and he's thinking about getting back into stand-up and he's nervous about it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, we
so
talked about it.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I feel like you write just as much as he does. Like, how are you finding the time to do it all?
You're better than Chris.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm glad you said it. No.
Chris gonna hear this and gonna get a call.
I'm gonna clip this part and send it directly to him.
He probably got this chat right. Exactly.
Group text with 3 of them.
Exactly. I'm very good at compartmentalizing things. I'm very good at going, I have to do this. I know I got 9 things to do, but I can look at one. If you really work, you can get a lot of shit done. A lot of people, we lose a lot of time when we say shit like, I just need to get myself together and then I'm going to figure out. What the fuck does that mean? It don't mean nothing. That's just a something you're saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me like people, we have these phrases that we use that just regular everyday phrases that are catch all for I'm not going to do shit. That's what it is.
It's the action of saying that you're gonna get your shit together that feels like enough.
It feels like enough. You know what I'm about to do? I'm trying to figure out.
Especially in Hollywood. Let me tell you how many motherfuckers are right. Oh, yeah, I'm getting this pilot together. And then we're going to get the casting. Yeah, oh, and then we're going to get so-and-so attached.
No, you just do it. I'm very good at when I say I'm going to do something, I stop and I do it. Mm. I'm just, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I love doing stand-up. I worked a day job. I worked as a nurse for many years here in town, and I would work from 7 to 7, and I would leave, and I would go and come to the comedy club and be at the comedy store from 8 to 9 o'clock at night till 2 in the morning every night. And everybody would be like, how you get up and go to the back to the clinic, and why you keep going doing stand-up? And I said, because if I work hard at night on this stand-up, that day job going to go away. Mm-hmm. And I knew that was going to be the case, and that's what I did. I was like, they wanted me to be the manager at a clinic. I was like, I don't want to be no fucking manager. I'm trying to get out of here. I ain't trying to move up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but I learned that being a manager, I remember her name was Pat Cruz. She was the person that talked me into being the manager of this clinic. And she said, if you learn how to run this clinic, one day you will be able to use these skills to run a TV show. And now I run a TV show. Wow. And I have to do all the things that I did when I was running that clinic, because I run the entire show, costume, wardrobe, all the everything. You know what I mean? So it's a thing.
When they say trust your path,
that's right. That's right. I agree.
You're really a testament to how people can change, because you always talk about your addiction.
Yeah.
But watching it on the special and how ridiculous you really when you say it, you got pulled over by the same cop in the same car.
Not the same time.
The same 2 days.
Run it 30 minutes back at least. Like, you were fucked up. That's his corner.
Yes, I know. I didn't realize that was like, that is the truest story in the world. And my father has receipts of all of the times he's bailed me out of jail.
Yeah, I saw that.
You saw it in the documentary? Special, he pulled it, he was like, you know, he got all the receipts, you know. And I was like, why do you keep this shit? Like, I've done so much other stuff. Like, how about some of the scripts I wrote? You got any of that? Like, my father, it's unbelievable how he literally is locked in on all the shit that I have fucked up. It's great, but it's all true, and I had to do all that shit so I could tell that story.
But you're so responsible now.
Because
he went through the bullshit. He learned early.
You get tired.
I'm good.
Yes, I'm like, I don't want to do none of that shit. I've been through it all. So it's like, nah, I'm good.
What's the most annoying part about AA?
AA?
Yeah. Huh. What do you hate about AA?
You know what I hate about AA? I hate people who take every single thing that they talk about, and some of the shit that they go on these like long winded stories about ain't got shit to do with us or your addiction. It's like, come on, man.
I've been to AA.
So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I went down a similar path. We ain't gonna talk about it openly on the podcast, but you know, a nigga got locked up more for a night. You know what I'm saying?
You're on your way.
You know,
was your sign the same as his? When you got the sign about sucking dick at me.
Oh my God. I gotta get out of here.
I was terrified because I'm a private school man.
Like
myself,
me.
You know what I'm saying? So. We ain't gonna tell me. That's for another day.
We're gonna circle back.
That's for another day.
But I'll say,
oh my God,
I remember sitting in those meetings, and it was like, these niggas want to be comedians.
Oh, some of them, yes.
They want to be the time to do to their be funny material. And,
yeah, sure.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm just sitting there like, this is the worst.
Yeah, it's been a journey. I used to go every day for years.
Yeah.
Years. Every day. I got the same sponsor, every day for years. I got sober at the VA over here in Westwood at the
Lodge House?
Yeah, well, the place I was at was called The Haven, and I got sober over there, and one of the things that nobody ever wanted to do in there was wash dishes. That was the shittiest job. So every year I go there on my birthday, my sobriety birthday, which is May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. And I go there and I wash dishes.
Wait. You chose to go sober on Cinco de Mayo.
Yes.
Real thugs.
Because I've been drunk enough. It was
so
it was
you know
enough.
What?
Yeah, of all the days, of all the days to pick,
right,
to go sober, that's a tough day.
I had enough. Like, I was sober on a regular day, so it didn't matter. I didn't need no Cinco de Mayo to be fucked up. I was just, it's Tuesday. Like, it didn't matter.
Sorry, I cut you off. So you said you wash dishes on your sober
I go over, birthday. I go over there and do, I go over there and talk to the guys, and I wash dishes. You know, on my birthday, once a year, every year, I've been doing that for 24 years.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. A great full circle moment.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's the thing to keep me locked in, to keep me, you know. That's
do
why
you struggle
this,
at all with it?
Nope.
Anymore?
I mean, I'm not, when I say nope like that, I do not struggle with, like, oh, I want to drink or get high, or I don't struggle with it. I don't. Am I, like, and I, when I was in rehab, I was leaving rehab and coming and doing stand-up. Because I was there for 90 days, and it was my job. So they had to let me go do it. So I was the only person that was leaving the rehab at night to go do stand, to go do a set. And I would, sometimes I would walk. You know what I mean? And people know I would walk for four, like 3 hours from Westwood all the way up to the Comedy Store and walk all the way back just to do wow. like a 10-minute, 15-minute spot. And nobody knew. I didn't know anybody. So nobody knew me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
We were talking to Sean Morgan a couple weeks ago. He got sober, I think it was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And he was saying that the first couple of weeks when he started doing stand-up sober, he noticed his jokes weren't hitting the same because he was kind of leaning on the alcohol as... a social crush or something to kind of, you know, loosen
maybe
up his set.
Maybe he thought he was doing better. You know, perhaps, when you're drunk, you probably think you're funny, but it was actually the same as
the True. I was trying to give Sean a bit of an out, you know what I'm saying?
Like, actually, you've always been that way.
Yeah, but I bring that up to, did you notice a shift in your comedy, or do you feel like your comedy has always kind of been separate from that
no,
area
of
your
life? No, because I got sober a year after I started doing stand-up. So I didn't have much time drink. I didn't build my act on intoxicated. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get sober because I knew if I got any type of power from this stand-up and I was using drugs and alcohol,
it would destroy you.
It would kill me.
Yeah.
I knew that for sure. So I was like, there's no need for me to even take this shit with me on this journey. And I had been through enough shit from 15 to that point at 30, 29 to know this ain't it. So I decided to drop that crutch that, you know, back there. And then I started my stand-up journey.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Okay, so I want to ask about your wife and relationships.
Okay.
Because you seem like a relationship guru.
I guess.
And we got some stuff.
Oh, yeah. We got some.
Queued up, too. Yes.
But you do stand up. You do a joke about it. But really, you guys were on the brink of divorce.
Sure.
And then... everything changed, and now you guys are like the model relationship.
Well, I don't know if we model, but we ain't getting divorced today.
So expensive.
Right? We ain't getting divorced today. But yeah, we went through all of that shit. We went through, you know, all the stuff that you go through. I think it was like 7-8 years in, and you know, we was just done. And it's the joke that I did, Divorce Saved My Marriage, where we actually tried to get divorced. We couldn't afford it, so we had to work together to try to save money and get our shit together so we could get divorced. And in us working together to get ourselves financially in a different place to get divorced, the working together is what made us come back and find each other.
Won't he do it?
You know, but it does not mean, I tell people this all the time, it does not mean we don't have a regular, like we... I mean, shit, we haven't had that conversation again 3 months ago. Like, I'm going to get the fuck out of here. As soon as these kids is gone, I'm leaving too. Like, we've been through all the shit. It's not easy, but, you know, I don't know what it is.
I admire the transparency, one, that you have with us as an audience, right?
Sure.
But two, I think... I admire how honest you can be in your relationship.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, being able to have those conversations, what's going on in your head. I'm about to fucking leave you. Right?
I'm
like,
leaving.
Being able to say that, but
yeah,
then
there's looking at these titties on the internet.
But there's a larger trust. Like, okay, we could talk about it. Because I feel like a lot of relationships go downhill when you're thinking that, but then you're just going through the motions of the relationship.
Yeah, you can't communicate it.
Exactly. Here's the thing. If you're going to be in something forever... how long are you going to pretend?
Facts. We're going to have to figure it out.
I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to be in here forever and I'm miserable, then you going to be in this bitch miserable too. We both ain't going to. I ain't going to be not doing the shit I want to do just so you can be happy. Meanwhile, I'm miserable. Fuck that. We both can be miserable, or we can figure it out and find a way for both of us to be happy. But I'm not going to act like I'm not so you happy.
I feel like you have a list of pet peeves.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
I would love, I just want to hear, just for my personal enjoyment.
Of like relationships or just period?
Period.
I mean, we don't have that much time.
Let's start with relationships.
Top three relationship pet peeves.
No, don't act like you don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. That's one, because you do. Let's not do that.
Like, give me an example.
Like, if I talk to you about, you know, the fact that I know you had an attitude yesterday, and you want to act like you didn't. You know you had an attitude. We know you know. Just say what the fuck the problem is so we can move on. Why do I have to spend all my energy opening up to dig it out of you?
And then if I don't care.
Fuck Karen, I asked. If I ask you, then just say it. Why I got to spend 45 minutes going, I know, and then by the time you start, then you open up. It's 45 minutes in. Now, I'm tired, and I don't give a fuck no more about what you're talking about. Because I done spent all my time trying to get you to say it. Don't do that.
It's because we got to spend the time trying to figure out how much you love us.
No. All that shit y'all making up is wearing us out. You can't be in a relationship and not do no fucking. Period. I got a pet peeve that you ain't. I don't give a fuck if you married, if you not. We got together with an intention. We work. If you work, I work, whatever. But there's a thing we came together. I take care of you, you fuck me. That is a part of it. There is no sleepy, I'm tired. You save your last 4 minutes of the day for me.
4 minutes?
If that's what it is. Sometimes we only got 4 minutes. No, you ever
go? What's the minimum fucks per week?
Now?
Yeah. What's the average?
I feel like it should be twice a week.
Twice a week?
That's twice fair. A week is about right.
Okay, but what days? What days good. Are we talking about? Like on a Tuesday and a Saturday?
I don't got it. I ain't got it stretched.
Spread it out.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't mind spreading it out, but you know, I don't have no schedule. Just whenever somebody decides it's time to do some fucking, it's time to do some fucking.
Okay.
That's all we got left.
Okay.
We married, we ain't doing shit else. What else we got?
Spontaneity.
We got nothing else to do. Ain't no new shit coming. So we might as well do some fucking.
Okay.
Number three.
And if you have more.
Yeah, I got plenty, but I'm going to end on three.
How much time do we have?
We ain't got to do everything together.
Nigga.
I don't have to give a fuck about your shit.
Thank you.
I don't. That's because you like. I don't have to like. It don't mean I don't want to be. We do a lot of shit together. This thing that you like to do, I don't want to do it. So why are you making me go? Do you want me to be unhappy? Because when I go to do this with you, I'm unhappy. So what you're telling me is you don't give a fuck about my happiness over what you want me to do. I'm not going.
Unpack that.
If you make me go, I'm going to have an attitude which is going to ruin your time. So why the fuck you just don't leave me at the house?
And then when you have an attitude, she's going to get mad that you got an attitude.
Knowing that I didn't want to fucking go.
This true.
Some shit I will go and do.
Then she takes the fucking off the table
because she making me do some shit she know I don't want to do.
That's what I'm saying.
Rich, do you have some things you need to get off your chest? What's going on here?
What temperature? What temperature should you be sleeping at? The temperature.
Oh,
like
wintertime. It's wintertime. Yes. 72. The summer 68.
Yes. Winter times.
Yeah.
Wait, say again?
72.
Yes. 72.
Fair. Summer 68.
Yes.
Summer 68.
It's cool to be in the 60s. You got to keep it in the 60s to be high.
I can't do that.
Huh?
I feel like it should just be a cool 71.
Throughout. All the time?
That's too
all
hot.
All the time.
That's a little hot in
that's
the summer.
Hot.
In the
no,
live.
No. In the summertime, I guess you just have it on. Like, 70s cold.
Depends. If your room is upstairs, it could be hot.
Because heat rises,
my room
you know.
Is upstairs.
That's science.
Oh, y'all must be rich.
I'm not there yet, David.
Because we got some steps in the house.
I'm not there yet, David. Sorry. Let me go write some shows real quick.
I got, what level fan do you put on when you sleep at night?
That third pool.
Maybe fan
three pools or what?
David flexed on me so hard. He said, well, when you get stairs, brother, that's when you.
You'll be running on a higher file.
Dang, okay.
That's
okay.
Hilarious.
All right. Okay.
This is great.
Anything else you need to get off your chest?
I know.
I'm trying to think. I don't know.
I think I'm good.
So you tell everyone that they're not going to make it, right? Every relationship, yeah, that's your thing. You tell people, oh, y'all not going to make it.
Sure.
You and Ron actually, yes, our host of the show, Ron. Do you know about
Ron
this?
Ron G?
Not yeah.
Remember y'all got into it from... Yeah.
Well,
what?
Me and
Ron
got it because Ron was.
Tell okay. us about that. Elaborate.
Ron was doing a bit about how great his marriage was and his girlfriend or something. And I went on stage and basically went against all the shit he said. And he got mad. And I got mad. And then he started talking back and forth. And I started talking shit to him because I wasn't going to let it go.
Because, David went upstairs and grabbed the mic from Sidekick.
Yes.
Ron was on stage. Yeah, yes. So he grabbed the mic from up there. And they were going back and forth.
Yes.
We during were going his back set.
During him, like, in between bringing up comedians.
Yeah.
And I don't remember. Now, is he married to that girl right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Married.
That's right. That's what I thought. And this is what I feel. I feel like unless you done some time in a marriage... Shut the fuck up.
That's fair.
You don't have... That's like a rookie walking into the NFL camp going, let me tell you what's going to happen. Sit your ass down. You ain't never played in a game. It's like when Megan Good and Devon Franklin put out that little book, The Wait. Shut the fuck up.
I never read it. I never read it.
Making a
book.
They
got divorced.
Exactly. Yeah.
And they divorced.
They divorced.
Yeah, she tired of this nigga and his preaching.
Like a lot.
Nobody. You got to do time before you start talking.
And giving the advice.
And giving it. Absolutely. Don't give no advice in relationship. And I'm talking about 10 plus years time. Anybody can make it 3 or 4, 5 years.
One would argue, David, that in this TikTok, Instagram generation,
sure,
they have kind of preached like, well, you don't really need the experience. Just document the journey along the way.
What the fuck does that mean?
It's like, it's kind of saying you don't need to have everything figured out. Just the lesson is we're watching you as you go along your journey and figuring it out. And like as a viewer, we learn from the real-time experience.
I have no idea.
You don't get what I'm saying?
I think what he's saying is like, saying, you know, my wife and I are doing this and we're going through this problem,
right,
and blah, blah, blah,
and
talking about it in real time.
Okay.
But I think you wouldn't disagree with that. I think what you're saying is instead of that, they're saying, this is what you should do.
Okay, I missed it.
Documented, and this is how we handle our conflicts. This is how we shore.
Okay.
But when y'all start getting out going, this is what you need to do.
That's the difference.
Don't be, you 2 years in. You still fucking 7 times a week. Get the fuck out of here.
You fucking too much to get advice.
And you ain't got no kids. That's a whole nother gear.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You ain't like, that's my thing. I don't want nobody's advice that ain't been doing it. We've been married 18 years. They asked me and Julie to do Black Love on OWN's Black Love, you know that show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, why? We don't know what the fuck we doing. We just in here. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I do not feel qualified to give anybody any advice outside of me doing it up there as a comic about your relationship. Because what worked for me ain't going to work for you.
Mm.
That ain't,
you don't have any tips that you think you could share?
Well, this is a perfect segue.
The tips, just fucking give up. Just let it go. Don't argue. Fuck it. Just let it go.
She's right. Right?
She's right. Right. He right. Just fuck it. It don't matter.
We have this this game that we like to play.
Are you happy?
I am. Okay. I'm so happy
we
with my wife.
We go back a little bit more.
David, blink twice.
I do.
If you need help.
I do. I love my wife. She's fantastic. My wife is incredible. But I just learned how to be in a space where I ain't gonna be arguing with you. She made a comment the other day. I said, what you expect to get out of that comment? Like, what do you want on the other end of that?
It's there.
And it shut her down.
I know.
Because it's just bullshit. It's just an argument. Right?
Yeah.
So, man, yes, I'm very happy, though. We good. We very, very happy.
You seem like it.
We are good. Yeah, we good. I'm just very real about what it is.
Yeah.
Yes,
that's
fair,
all.
That's fair.
Authentic.
Yes. Okay, so this part of our segment, or this part of the show, is called Relationship Roulette. So we basically go to Reddit in the relationship column, in the marriage column, and pull out ridiculous things. You can't look at it.
I can't see nothing.
Okay, so I picked this one because in your show, you talked about how you and your wife be arguing in front of anybody. You don't give a fuck.
Oh, absolutely.
So this one says,
basically, they were in an argument, and the boyfriend said, if you don't want to be called a bitch, then don't act like one.
Woo! You said boyfriend?
Yes.
See so that?
It was a situation where the first time he called her a bitch, she was like, yo, don't, that's disrespectful, don't do that. He did it again. She said, yo, she came back at him, and he's like, if you don't want me to call you a bitch, then don't act like one.
So what's the question?
What's the question?
The question is, okay, so you and your wife, when you argue in front of each other, are you guys, is there a boundary?
Do you call her a bitch in front of other people?
Are you calling her a bitch in public? Like,
in public, no. But I've said bitch before. I've called her fuck you. She fuck you. A bitch don't. We've done all that.
So you just throw it back and forth. There's no.
We've done all that. But what I did learn is that you can't do that repeatedly.
Yeah.
You can't do that because it there's a boundary. And she hit me with that a few years back. That, you know, I don't call my wife a bitch on a right. Like, when we get mad, angry, we've gotten to that place. But I ain't never called my wife out of her name when I was her boyfriend.
Mm.
I've never done that.
Because I feel like even as, like, a father, right?
Yeah.
Imagine
somebody calling my daughters a bitch. Oh, it's coming. It's going to happen.
The older one.
Both
sure.
of them. It don't, it's going
to happen.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
I got to be honest with you. some of them got it coming. Some of my kids need to be. I know that they need to be told shut the fuck up. Sometimes I know it. I've been needed to be told shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
My wife has said it to me. Yeah. I think it's a matter of where you are and what kind of relationship you got. It's not a black and white rule.
Mm.
I don't think that you got to have a merit relationship is you put deposits in good and bad.
Mm.
And if you always deposit in bad, I don't trust, fuck you, bitch, all this, and you not putting nothing in good, it's not going to balance out. So, like, if I go and tell my wife she ain't shit, I've put in enough good shit that I can afford a couple of you ain't shits. Mm. You see what I'm saying? Because I've done things on the positive to balance out. Do you know you ain't shit?
Give us one. Huh? I find it hard to believe you like say something positive.
What? No, like
tell
positive.
Me something positive.
Positive meaning lifting her up, supporting the things that she wants to do,
yes.
Making sure that I take care of everything. My wife does. You know, mm-hmm. I take care of all the things. My wife don't even damn near have to put gas in her car. I do everything. You know what I mean? I make sure that whatever she needs, I got it. You know what I mean? Like, if she works, she want to support, she want to write, whatever she want to do,
yeah.
I make sure that I do that and make sure that I lift her up. And I've made mistakes and not done that before,
mm-hmm.
and realized that not doing that has hurt her feelings, and I had to go back and correct that, course correct that. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I know I be talking shit. But
you be
I take care of my wife and my daughter.
Balance. I really joke
do.
With yeah. balance.
I really do.
Yeah.
I really do. But I have told her to shut the fuck up. Ask her shit.
We have a question.
Sure.
This is completely switching gears.
Okay.
What is a product or device that you've spent less than $100 on that changed your life?
Taking my wife to Sizzler on our first date.
Okay.
I spent about $19.99.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. The very first time we went out to eat, I said, I want to take you to dinner. And she said, okay. And I came to pick her up. She was dressed very nice. I was like, why are you so dressed up? Right? And she was like, you said you'd take me to dinner. And we went to Sizzler.
Damn.
And
she stayed with you, huh?
Well, you know what? We sat in that Sizzler, and we talked for 4 hours.
Wow.
Had the best time. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't do it as a test. I did it because that's where I was at. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I... And I like Sizzler at the time. That's where I was. That's where I was.
That
in
was
my, I'm
shit.
From Cleveland.
You said I'm a regular, an honest man.
Yeah, I'm a regular... Yeah. Like, I'm a Midwest dude. I'm not Hollywood at all. I am quick to go eat at a chain restaurant. You know what I mean? Like, and I wanted to go to Sizzler. And took her to Sizzler, and she sat there with me, and we had the best time, and it was in that moment that I knew this was it. And that was in front of a $19 buffet, all you can eat.
Those sound like the good old days. You know what I'm saying? Because I feel like in L.A. especially, right
that's
now, if
we
you
were
to take somebody on a date to Sizzler, like what if a nigga took you on a date to Sizzler, first date?
Oh, I can't. We're not finishing the date.
See?
I'm like,
I know.
I'm just,
Wait, what if he's got the character? What if he's got the...
Maybe that was our second day. I think our first
LA
was coffee.
Today, that's not that... You're getting shot down. For sure.
Why?
For sure. I just feel like there's a... Okay, are you asking for an LA person or are you asking for me? I feel like the standard... No. I feel like the standard in LA, you definitely have to drop a cool $200 on a dinner before you're even looked at seriously.
Oh.
That's just the culture I feel out here. I'm from the South. I'm from Texas. So
okay, where?
From Dallas. Yes. So I feel like if you want to just hang out, go on a nice picnic, I'm having a great time, truthfully. But I feel like since I've come here to LA, that standard has raised so much. And you're kind of seen as shit, truthfully. The girls that I've been around out here, I feel like you're seeing that shit if you don't take them on like a really nice extravagant which is
I always say go on a hike.
It's weird
because it is kind of like a low class type restaurant. Just do something free, like go on a hike. I always tell people hike should be your first date because no one spends any money.
Right.
You hopefully don't wear a lot of makeup, so you can see
who you're really looking at.
You can see their bodies because you're normally in like workout clothes.
Yeah.
Are they athletic?
See if they're athletic or not? Because that was a big deal for me.
Oh yeah.
So Lonnie pretty much just told herself and said, "I don't date fat niggas."
Right.
That's
well, I don't date anybody anymore. I dated a guy that had like a really nice body and looked athletic
and couldn't
and
do
then
the hike.
He could do it, but I could just tell from how he was that he wasn't athletic.
Hikes
are great first days, no money spent.
Yeah,
it's true. That's better than Sizzler.
It is.
That's better. Maybe that was our second because I think the first time was coffee.
The coffee day was good.
We did coffee the first time, and then we ended up. That's what they grabbed.
I feel like LA culture has just shifted so much.
My wife's from Indianapolis. She's Midwest, so am I.
Okay.
Neither one of us are like even now.
Yeah.
We're not very material. She's not materialistic at all. My wife is not like that's not her thing. She's not.
People blame that LA culture. You get to choose how you are.
Yeah.
Like, you breathe the energy that you give out.
So. Excellent. Well, we want to be respectful of your time. We got maybe two more questions.
That's fine.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Okay. What is the worst advice you've gotten from a fellow comedian?
Okay.
I love you, all your answers ready to go.
I remember it wasn't advice that he gave to me, it was advice he gave to my class. A comedian came to my class.
I'm not gonna say his name.
You ever wanna do some jokes? You know, like somebody like Red Fox, you know, he dead, so you can use all them jokes. Them jokes just sitting there. What's wrong with them jokes? And I'm sitting there going, motherfucker. As soon as he left, I had to undo everything he said.
Oh, my God.
I was like, you cannot take jokes from the dead.
Oh.
I mean, they just sitting there. Why you can't use, like, he went through this whole thing.
The joke cemetery.
What?
You know, right? Rewrite Martin Luther King's speech. He gone. Shit.
Ain't nobody gonna notice.
He had a dream. You can have a dream. Why you can't have a dream? Like, what? Like, what are you talking about? And so that is the worst advice I ever heard from
your whole class.
Everybody, and I'm like, no, I'm sitting behind him going, no, none of this is good.
That is horrible advice.
Yes, that's horrible advice.
It's true story. Hilarious, though.
See, now I'm going to go through the comics and be like trying to figure out the dead comics and his current
set. So many comedians.
We're going to ask him about research. That's going to be in, they got to pay for that.
Exactly.
Exclusive. What is something that you're watching on Netflix? Like, what's a comedy special that you're...
Comedy special?
Or sorry, not a comedy special. Like a comedy TV show or a comedy feature on Netflix that you're binging right now.
Well,
Or a special. What's
I'm trying to
think that you really like.
Yeah.
Other than yours, of course.
A stand-up special that I really liked lately. Jeez. I don't know. I'm trying to think. I really don't have one.
You said Gerard Carmichael special?
Yes. When you said Netflix, I was thinking Netflix. He was not on Netflix.
Oh, I did make it Netflix.
Netflix.
Let me pull that.
That's
back.
Why I was thinking about
what?
Netflix.
Okay, sorry.
But Gerard Carmichael's special was fucking fantastic to me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great. I thought that special made me go, wow. That, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See,
for
Rich
sure.
was trying to start something, though.
What? What are you trying to, what
his
you trying
issue
to
with it is that it wasn't ha ha funny.
No, it was not. A lot of people will say it's not stand up. Yeah. This is what I think it, I loved about it. I love the fact that he has the courage to sit in that and tell his story. Yes, mm-hmm. he got laughs here and there, but it's not the traditional, ha, ha, I get that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? A lot of people would say that wasn't a stand-up special, and that's fine, too. But whatever that was, he mm-hmm. did it. You know what I'm saying? He's a, and so I think I respect anybody who has the courage to go on stage and have a story to tell and do it the way they want to do it, because he's going to get criticism from a lot of people that's going to go, well, that ain't stand up. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. You do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But like, also, if you have something to take away from it regardless.
Exactly.
That's really the point.
Exactly. I will say that watching his special, and stand up is changing. Stand up is not just ha, 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 right. ha, da, 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 da. It's not that no more. Mm. And all of these comedians are getting to a place where they're realizing that it's okay to have levels. And that's why you can't see nothing in 15 minutes. This is bullshit. This is okay. When you go in there and you command the audience's attention for an hour and a half, then now you can talk to me. Mm-hmm. Now I want to hear what you got to say. And because in that hour and a half, one of the things you cannot do, you can't keep the energy up here for an hour and a half.
Right.
They can't take it. So you come out, you hit them in the mouth for 15 minutes, and then you
send them on an emotional journey.
You take them. So like Gerard did that, mm-hmm. and he stayed in this space that they could stay in. Comedian, and I think a lot of comedians, especially that started with the Def Jam and all of the, you know, even Quake's special. It was only 36 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You can't, he fired these motherfuckers for 36 minutes. He just got like, but after a while, the audience can't laugh. You can't tap into that emotion that long. Mm. So you got to have it to be able to play other levels. And most comedians can't take that.
They are doing that. Like Bill Burr's special was almost the same format as yours, where he went down.
Down? Yes.
About the whole mushrooms and his dad and all that. And then came back up.
And I think that's attributed to Dave Chappelle. Mm. And like that's one of the things that he said. You don't have to be funny the entire time, but you do have to be interesting.
Hmm.
And now a lot of comedians are afraid of silence. Silence freaks them out. And to me, silence is... If I, the only time silence freaks me out is if it's after what I thought was a punchline. Yeah. But other than that, you know, I'm okay with these niggas being quiet.
That's a lonely place.
That's a lonely place. And then I said, bitch. And don't nobody be laughing. And yeah, that's
but
a problem.
See, I agree with you. I do like the vulnerability that we're seeing a lot. But I am scared that stand-up's going to become this thing where it is like the Gerards, which is interesting, but I want to laugh. I want to laugh for an hour.
Well, what they will do is they will create another category, mm-hmm. like they did for Janine Garofalo. They call it alternative comedy. Mm-hmm. And that's when it was like they switched this gear because this just woman was doing something that was different. It was in between whatever.
Is it going to be emo comedy?
Yeah, something. Like, yeah, right, exactly. If somebody comes along and does it so well that people want to watch them do this, they mm-hmm. will create a space for it. Yeah. They always do.
Well, that was the whole thing with the Emmy nominations that came out. Because I think their team thought it was like for sure he was going to get nominated.
Who? Gerard. Yeah, he did not.
Exactly. And he didn't. And that was like a big blow to their team because it was like we tried to do something creative. But I think because he's competing with so many other stand-ups.
Yes, that was very funny.
Yeah. Right?
You got to be funny. You still, if it's going to be comedy, you do have to mm-hmm. be funny. I love what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But you do have to be funny. You have to have moments of, I feel like you got to have a couple of moments of explosion.
That's where it lost me.
You know what I mean? Yeah, there was none of that. Yeah. But I was interested the whole time.
So interesting.
I was mm-hmm. very interested though. Like I watched all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was over, I text him, I text Crisp. I was like, nigga, that shit was great.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And the way it was shot too. It was beautiful.
Oh, Bo Burnham, yeah. Like I want him to shoot my next shit. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
So, stand up is changing, man.
It is.
Yeah, it is. It's changing. But I'm, you know,
everybody's
I'm here
following
for
you.
But we're gonna count on
gonna
you.
See.
That's what I'm saying.
We're
gonna
see.
Well, we got another one coming. In 1 year, I'm filming another one. So
perfect.
Yeah.
Where are you gonna do it?
Yeah.
I'm doing it at Radio City Music Hall in New York.
I'm buying my tickets. I'm going. I'm going to that.
6,000 strong, baby.
Yeah, amazing.
Yes, I'm very excited.
Cool. Well,
I want to say,
let me tell you why I'm in New York. My wife was the third African-American woman to dance online as a New York Red City or Rockette.
Wow.
So her father told the story of how when he was a kid growing up in Harlem, he went to go watch the Rockettes. And they put him out, and they was like, nigga, you don't belong in here. No black people was allowed in here at the time when he was a kid. And then 30 years later, 40 years later, he comes back to watch his daughter be one of the only black Rockettes to dance on stage. And she was also their spokesperson. So, like, inside Radio City is a huge mural of my wife on the wall that'll be there forever. And I said, and they asked me why I wanted to do New York, why I want to do Radio City. Is because I want my children to be able to say that both their parents play Radio City Hall, Music Hall. So that's the reason why I chose that. So.
That's incredible.
Awesome. We got to tell the producers. I feel like we got a lot of Black History Month special content in this episode.
Slide that in a different folder. Yeah,
let's save this episode for February. We good. No, that's amazing, man. That's
awesome. Yeah, we're going to be there. Yeah,
I think I'm very excited about it.
Congratulations.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun. Yes. Thank you. Very nice to see everybody. This is great.
Where can everyone follow you?
Instagram, TheDavidAArnold. You got to put in the A. If you don't put in the A, you're going to get the white guy that does the soundtracks for James Bond. That is not me. You got to put in David A. Arnold. You put in David A. Arnold, you can get me on all platforms all across.
Amazing.
Thank you, man.
Thank you, Lonnie. Hey, thank Lonnie, where can we find you?
In the janitor's closet, doing what I do.
Perfect.
So you're really not going to tell them? Okay.
No, we're not.
Just follow Chocolate Sunday.
Chocolate Sunday.
Sunday Scoop Pod.
You can find me on IG at RichMadeThatOne1.
And you can find me at It's Kamari Love. That was your Sunday Scoop. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will catch you next time.
Absolutely. Yay. Thank you, David.
Yeah, man, that was great.
Thank you. Perfect. You're incredible. Woo!